Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Gaffigan is going to be joining us momentarily. He now has a very funny book that is titled Dad is Fat. Jim is a stand-up comedian, an actor, an author. He's known for his riffs on Hot Pockets, bacon, and now expressing all the joys and horrors of life with five young children. Living in New York City in an apartment that has two bedrooms. He is frequently in Milwaukee. His wife is from Milwaukee, actually, and she is his executive producer. So they come here for family events, and he appears New Year's Eve at the Pabst, has done so for a long time. He'll be at Boswell Books this coming Saturday, and it will be part of a Father's Day celebration, starting the Father's Day a little bit early, and it will feature Jim Gaffigan appearing for his new book Saturday at 7 o'clock. He saw himself as a single guy and was for a long time leading a fairly solitary life doing stand-up comedy, and then all of a sudden, here he is with five children and shoved into a whole different way of living. There's a lot you can learn from dealing with children, he says. And there's a lot that you will find is right on point, actually, as you read through this book. It's his first book, and it goes from the absurd nature of children's literature. There are some books that we read over and over and over again, and he's read them so many times that he's asked some really deep, philosophical, funny questions about what is the meaning of this book. Is it possible to read a Dr. Seuss book, he says, and not sound a little drunk? He writes about the role that you fulfill in your children's eyes, the father's role of a ceremonial role of attending pageants and ordering pizzas. And he writes about all kinds of things that we go through as parents, being sleep deprived for such a long period of time, why it is they have a tendency to gain weight when you're a parent, why other dads tend to intimidate him. He writes some very funny things about preschools because he's in the position of kids in preschool taking one to one part of New York and one to the other part of New York, and they're all kind of eccentric. So here he is on Bacon, a famous piece that he has done, and then we'll be talking to Jim Gaffigan this hour.
Of course, what makes breakfast in bed so special is you're lying down and eating bacon, the most beautiful thing on earth. Bacon's the best. Even the frying of bacon sounds like applause. It's like, ah, yay, bacon! You want to know how good bacon is? To improve other food, they wrap it in bacon. If it weren't for bacon, we wouldn't even know what a water chestnut is.
Thank you, bacon. Sincerely, Water Chestnut III.
And those bits of bacon are like the fairy dust of the food community.
You don't want this baked potato?
Bring! Now it's your favorite part of the meal. Not interested in a salad? Bibbidi bobbidi bacon! I just turned it into an entree. But once you put bacon in a salad, it's no longer a salad. It just becomes a game of find the bacon and the lettuce. It's like you're panning for gold. Eureka! Bacon! Not many ways to prepare bacon. You can either fry it or get botulism. It's amazing the shrinkage that occurs. You start with a pound, you end up with a bookmark. Really, the only bad part about bacon is it makes you thirsty for more bacon. I never feel like I get enough bacon. At breakfast, it's like they're rationing it. Here's your two strips of bacon. I want more! More bacon!
Jim Gaffigan with one of his more famous comedy pieces on bacon. How many vegetarians do you know who are vegetarians except they eat bacon? I've known more than a few. Jim's book is Dad is Fat. He's going to be at an early Father's Day celebration at Boswell Books this Saturday, and we're going to be talking about going from a single guy to a father with five children and all that that entails from the mind of somebody who is a comedian, and it's a pretty funny book. Dad is Fat is the name of it, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Jim Gaffigan. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Jim Gaffigan, hello.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, great pleasure. So it's not just bacon that may make Dad fat. It's eating the other part of the cupcake. Isn't that true? As a parent, you eat all the food that's left by your children.
Yeah. I kind of, elaborate on how being a parent of a young child is like the opposite of a Jenny Craig diet. You end up just eating these small portions of leftovers. You know, it's cruel. And it's not like the kids are not finishing the food because they're watching their weight. They're just distracted by, like, a lamb. They're like, wow, that's a lamb. So.
Yeah, I understand. It isn't it, when you think about your life, Jim, and you write about this, but to go from this guy who led this pretty solitary, maybe lonely, but it didn't seem lonely at the time, existence as a stand-up comedian, working late nights, you're by yourself, you don't mind being by yourself, to a guy who is married with five children. Talk about a life change, huh?
Yeah, it's a pretty dramatic one. And it's one that, you know, in the book, you know, I have a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, almost 2-year-old, and an 8-month-old.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, you know, and I talk about, you know, 10 years ago, I really couldn't get a date, and now my apartment's crawling with babies, like I left peanut butter out or something. But I, you know, if someone told me 12, 13 years ago that I would have five kids and that I would be happy about it, I would think I was brainwashed or in a cult, which is another essay, because I think parenting is this strange cult that if you don't have kids or you're not, like, someone enamored with young kids, it seems like a cruel existence, but it's parenting's really, you know, it's the most important thing I'll do in my life. I know that, but it seems weird because it's hard to articulate it to people that don't have kids. It sounds like you're lying. You know, you're like, oh, it's amazing. I didn't get any sleep last night. And my kid was kicking me in the head. And to people without kids, it just seems like you're describing torture.
No. Well, it's not as though you have a couple kids. You have five children, and there's a very funny essay about how people finally stop sending you presents or congratulatory emails or whatever when you came to child number five. I mean, they just stop after a while, right? People can't believe it.
Yeah, it's absurd. You know, I have siblings that didn't really even respond to the email announcement about our fifth kid. Because there is an expectation that it's just another one. You know, and as a comedian, I got done with this last hour special, Mr. Universe. My wife and I, who's from Milwaukee, we write everything together, and we were like, well, we did the four kids material, and then we released the special, and we found out that my wife was pregnant. So it's this ironic twist where it keeps growing. I had all this material. I had this joke about, if you want to know what it's like to have a fourth kid, just imagine you're drowning and then someone hands you a baby. Mm. So it's overwhelming, but it's also something that, I really love. And, you know, if I found, you know, I haven't talked to my wife in an hour, she could be pregnant again. it's not something that would throw me. It's like, all right, more the merrier.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't throw your many fans at this point, I'm sure, too. Well, you also write this lovely description of your wife, that you met this woman who was just absolutely perfect, and I think she was doing Shakespeare in the Park with very poor kids and loving being with children, and she really gave that to you, didn't she?
Yeah, I think I grew up the youngest. And so I talk about my exposure to little kids really did not go beyond when Raven Simone was added to the Cosby Show. I was never a camp counselor or a babysitter.
Right.
And my wife, who's the oldest of nine, is someone that really kind of opened my eyes to children. Obviously, when it's your own kids, it's even more important. But now I would say I'm a fan of children. And you know, 10 years ago, I would see people carrying these little kids on a plane, and I would think, why would you subject yourself to this? And so, but my wife's a pretty amazing, she's a tireless, you know, individual who's very creative. You know, I describe her as she's kind of like Napoleon. She only needs 3 hours of sleep, and she, you know, she parents in a way where it almost looks like she's doing rhythmic gymnastics. You know, there's nothing instinctive about parenting for me. And I think a lot of men identify with that. You want to be good, but there's nothing in our bones about it. So I don't know if that's politically correct to say, but there are plenty of men that are great at it. But for me, I, you know, we got a newborn, and I Googled how to bond with a baby, you know, because it was something foreign to me.
Yeah, I fully understand. I love the chapters because I'm a person who likes naps as well. There's nothing like a good nap. It gives you all this energy, and you just feel great when it's over, and I highly recommend them. But you feel that way, and you write beautifully about the pleasures of a nap, and oh my goodness, you've lost some of them. You've lost a lot of sleep, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some compromises in parenting, but, you know, losing out on some sleep is, you know, well worth it. You know, I always joke around, I think I had a tweet about this, how similar me getting allowed to take a nap is very similar to just me listening to my kids scream in another room. You know, there's the nap that I cherish and I relish is disappearing, but it's replaced by something more important. I mean, I should also qualify. I mean, I'm not a big participant in the morning. You know, I work at night, so
right.
I am excused from some of that. I'm not someone who's completely given up on my appreciation for staying up late and sleeping in.
Is it true, though, that you do occasionally take your children or a child to the movies so you can sleep during it?
I've done that. I've done that at least 3 times. And you know, like I say in the essay, it's not like I'm missing the movie. We're going to see the movie another 10 times at home.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And it's I do feel some guilt because there is obviously one of the funner parts of parenting is seeing a child's reaction to something, whether it be a parade or taking them to Disney. But you know, the movie, it's usually dark. I know that. You know, I'm not doing it if I'm holding a baby or anything, but that is some quality nap time there. And it only costs
$12. So. Only $12, and it's worth every darn penny of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do a critical analysis of children's literature. I love this essay as well, and people will be familiar with these books. You get to know these pretty well because you've read them like 10 times, if not more.
Oh, yeah. I used to know Goodnight Moon by heart, and I did a book event, and they gave me Goodnight Moon, and I was like, let me see if I know this by heart, and I skipped a page. So there is, I mean, maybe it's my short-term memories just disappearing, but I used to be able to recite it, like, you know, because, you know, these books, they, you know, I don't know if children are chewing on them, but they also just eventually disintegrate after a child or two. So, but the children literature, it's amazing how, you know, I talk about how there are people that have a favorite children's book. And it's not that they love the book so much. It's just that they've grown. There's a resistance where you're like, all right, you know what? You know, Cats for Sale is something that I've gone beyond kind of resenting. I almost enjoy hearing it recited at this point. And so there's a strange association you have with some children's books because some of them are profoundly bad. You know, it's you know, I talk about how it seems like they're almost dictated by Morse code to someone. Like Billy has a ball, Cindy has, you know, a cupcake. They decide to share. End of book. And so you'll just have to read those over and over again. And you can't engage in cynicism. You can't be like, this is just a really weak storyline here, you know, or, you know, Cats for Sale. It's like, it's this guy, why would anyone want to buy a cap that the guy's already wearing? I mean, that's just bad salesmanship.
I like, if you don't mind, I'm going to read the description of the Giving Tree. I'm sure many people in our audience are familiar with that. A favorite, you say, but really, how depressing. Whenever I read this to my children, I always think, I'm the tree, now I'm the stump. What's the lesson here? Take everything from your parents until they have nothing left, and then move back in when you've squandered it all and you're an old loser and your parents will let you crash on their stump.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's something really kind of, there's something dark about Shel Silverstein. You know, there's something really, you know, there's, but I love that about parenting. There's this gallows humor that I think that you're given when you're handed your child, where you have to kind of have a sense of humor about it, because it's impossible to do it perfectly. And I always find that, you know, on Twitter, when something, you know, occasionally someone will say that I'm complaining about parenting or I'm anti-family, it's like, it's only the parents that complain that are involved. You know, it's like, if I wasn't complaining, you should be concerned. You know, it's, I went to a birthday party, I think a couple weeks ago, that was 8 a.m. on a Saturday, which, and I remember thinking, you know, because in the essay, there was a, you know, Jeannie and I referenced a party that was 10 a.m., and then we got one after the book was already submitted for print at 8 a.m., and I was like, who's holding this birthday party, the Taliban? You know, it's like 8 a.m.
And you must have, with five children, I can't imagine what kind of schedules you have for birthday parties and school activities, and you're going to a lot of events, Jim.
Yeah, there's a lot of events, and there's a lot, you know, and you gain a certain kind of realism where you're like, all right, what, you know, a parent-teacher conference at nursery school, what are we going to learn here? You know, is our kid a serial killer? If not... Can you send an email? You know, like, because at a parent-teacher conference for nursery school, you find out, well, your daughter loves the color green, and here's her scribbles from a month ago, and here's her scribbles from yesterday. So, but the scheduling thing is definitely a juggling match, and that's where my wife being Wonder Woman really comes in handy. But I don't know, you know, there's just constant planning. And my kids are young, so I always jokingly say it must get really easy when they're teenagers.
Right. Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah.
You also, maybe this is true because you live in New York, but you have found, I must say, some fairly eccentric places to send your kids to preschool.
Yeah, well, you know, there's our preschool. We live in near the East Village in Manhattan, and when our son, who went to this preschool, was when we were first there, there was I picked him up one day and they gave me a drawing of his. And I remember thinking, this is kind of frightening, because, you know, it's interesting because this was also the basis of the pilot for the TV show we did. So I don't know what version was in the book, but we got this drawing, and it looked like it might be, you know, a strange body part.
Right.
And the teacher revealed that it was, because they're trying to demystify the, you know,
the body parts.
The body part.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, that's pretty awkward. But, you know, my son goes to a very, he went to a very kind of offbeat, kind of play-based preschool, which, from what I can tell, just meant that there were no chairs, you know, and so, you know, I was the only parent there. I think Jeannie and I were the only parent that didn't have a kid named after a spice or have a tattoo. You know, our son did not have a fedora.
Right.
So it was pretty, you know, but it's fun. I mean, that's what I love about New York. I love the fact that my kids are growing up in an urban setting. I grew up in a small town. I like the fact that my children will ask if the woman in a burqa is a ninja. You know, I like that stuff.
Yeah, I like all of that, too. And then I think it's your daughter who only got a dollar when the tooth fairy came, and she found out that her friend, maybe from her preschool, which is pretty la-di-da, got $20 for a tooth?
Yeah, it's just, it's It's baffling, you know, that's from an essay with my amazement about the level of lying that you engage in when you're a parent.
Yes.
And, you know, we all have this notion of, all right, there's Santa Claus, but it's baffling. And there's no universal belief. You know, when I was growing up, you would get a quarter if you lost a tooth. And then I adjusted for, you know, inflation, and I thought a dollar was okay. And, you know, my daughter came home and she was like, Nellie got $20. And I'm like, $20?
I know.
You know, it's obvious that that father or mother did not have any other bill smaller than a 20. And they were just like, all right, fine, we'll go with the 20.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. Jim Gaffigan is our guest this hour, and we welcome phone calls for him as well. We're going to hear one of his comedy bits on camping in a little while. Maybe we should hear it now? No, not now. Later. Okay. We welcome phone calls for him. He's going to be in Milwaukee. His wife is from Milwaukee, and she is really a writing partner of his and producer of his theater performances. They have 5 children, and the book is very funny. And if you have kids, I think you read a lot of it and you say, oh, yeah, that's true. Dad is Fat is the name of the book. And this description of Jim is in, when you read about the author, Jim won the Spanish award in high school. Granted, there were only 3 people in his class, and one of those people was the teacher, and the other student was kicked out halfway through the year. So that's his claim to fame. Actually, it's much more than that. He's a stand-up comedian, an actor, an author, and this is his first book. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. So all of those ways to get a hold of us as we speak with Jim Gaffigan about being a dad on this early Father's Day. What about this idea that we all lie to our children? Is that really true? I guess we do. You do it. But you don't mean badly at all. But you just do it. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Jim Gaffigan. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jonathan in Appleton. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi there.
Hi.
Jim, big fan.
Thanks.
Hoping to see your upcoming show. I'm a musician. My wife and I are actually both musicians. We met in college, and we have a 2-year-old now. And we nowhere near your record, but wondering how you guys deal with the artist's hours and the fact that you're always working and you keep late hours. And I mean, what do you do for each other? How do you keep your marriage wonderful? Because it must be if you're still together.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, some of it is, I think, because my wife is Catholic, so she can't leave me. But I would say, I'm very lucky. I mean, well, we're both very lucky. I mean, it's very rare that, at least in comedy and stand-up, that your writing partner is your partner in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is something of the, it probably borders on codependency, you know, where we do everything together. And I would say that, you know, a lot of our creativity time is when the kids are in bed. So when we were writing this book, there were some late nights, but, you know, when you have kids, you're kind of keeping strange hours anyway. And we had a newborn at the time. So some of it is just, you know, this is kind of how we have fun, is hanging out and maybe sitting down and talking about comedy material. It's our relationship is very much tied to making each other laugh and creating. And so I think that that's a really important part of our relationship. Believe me, whenever I find myself giving advice, I always want to say, look, I'm a guy who tells diarrhea jokes for a living, so don't take it too seriously. But I think I'm very lucky. You know, I think that we share very similar interests. I mean, I'm not someone with tons of hobbies. It's not like I want to go out and go golfing or fishing or anything. It's, you know, so if we have time off, we're spending it with our kids, or if it's late at night, which is some of our couple time, you know, it's, we have similar interests. So it's, we're lucky in that way.
Yeah. Well, Evan, you write this very funny chapter on how pale you are, and your children are pale as well, but partially because of your ethnic background. But you also are a guy who just doesn't go out very much. It's a, it's very funny. I'm sure you go out more than maybe we are led to believe, but you'd prefer to be, you know, be inside.
Yeah, I'm, you know, and believe me, I mean, parenting is also great because it exposes you, but it kind of, it exposes you to different things, and you know, definitely, I go to the park and go to the beach. I don't think I would go to the beach if I didn't have kids, and so there's something about the hurdle of keeping these pale kids that I'm attempting to raise on this planet that rotates around a star. You know, it's an insane endeavor to kind of cover them with sunscreen as we go into the summer.
Yeah.
But
thanks, Jonathan, for the call.
Thank you.
Charles in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Jim, it's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, thanks.
My 12-year-old son and I, watched all your specials. He absolutely adores you. He thinks you're hysterical. You're like the funny. He thinks you're the funniest stand-up comedian he's ever seen. And I just wanted to thank you for your material. I hope you take this the right way. Your material is completely appropriate for a 12-year-old boy, and he thinks you're hysterical. And I really appreciate all your work and. Just to have the father-son bond, to be able to watch you.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. You know, it's weird being a considered a family-friendly or a clean comic. I wish that there was I could take credit for that. I mean, some of it is I really believe that comedians get too much credit or criticism for the type of comedy they do. It's just it's kind of just how it comes out. There's not some tactical move. I mean, I'm not somebody who would necessarily feel comfortable cursing in front of a lot of people anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, I curse in everyday life, but, and also, you know, some of the subject matters that I discuss, or, you know, you're right about things you know or that you're passionate about, and they end up being relatively universal topics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I don't know how, you know, how much I would need to curse if I'm discussing bacon. Anyway, you know, it's I feel like I got lucky with that. So.
Thanks so much for the call, Charles. Ron in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Kathleen. Really like your show. I'm just calling because I have a story about my mother's husband. My dad died when I was about 18. The oldest child was 20. And the youngest one was one, and was 11 kids.
Ooh.
And three years later, she married a bachelor farmer from a neighboring county, and he was our dad for 35 years.
Oh.
And he just died in the past year, and I kind of wanted to tell that story. And kids really give you a lot. We have five kids of our own. They really give you a lot of material for jokes and for life in general. So I'll take my comments off the air.
Before you go, Ron, can you imagine what it was like for him to walk into that family? Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it was a match made in heaven. You know, you'd never believe it if it wouldn't have happened to you. But he did a great job with it. The family joke was that he married my mom for all that free labor on the farm, and his comeback was that it wasn't quite so free when he had to repair all the equipment and the cars that they broke along the way, but it was good.
Wow, that's quite a story, Jim, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah. Thanks, Ron.
I mean, it really kind of illustrates that, you know, we have, you know, this path of life. It's like we have no idea. You know, I talked about 10 years ago, you know, it would seem unimaginable, you know, but it all kind of spins in the same, in a positive way usually. You know, we're very lucky, at least for me. You know?
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ron, for the call. I have that image in my mind. It's a good one, too. Mike in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hello. Say, I just wanted to share that my wife and I are the parents of 6 kids, and they're out of the house now, so we're kind of past that stage that you're in, Jim, but I'm wondering if you have planned, or maybe you already have had, your first cross-country road trip.
Oh, the road trips. Tell us about them, Jim. They're in the book.
Well, yeah, we have, I do stand-up shows where we'll get on a tour bus. This is different from getting in like a Winnebago or anything like that. But we, you know, luckily I'm in the position where the tour bus will pull up to our apartment in New York City and we'll get all the kids on. And of course the irony is that the tour bus is the same size as our actual apartment. But then we'll do a show a night and we'll go across, and I have an essay kind of detailing this. You know, some kids, they during spring break, they, you know, go to a cabin, or they go to Florida, and my kids, they get to sleep on a tour bus, and we do a show a night and we travel across and we've gone different places. And it's interesting, you know, because I mean, being a comedian, it's strange, you know. My dad was a small town banker, so but I think that the tour bus thing is their version of the family adventure in a car. It's fun.
You want to talk a little bit about how 7 of you live in a 2-bedroom apartment in New York? I can't quite imagine it.
Yeah, I should say that we're not trying to prove anything. I mean, this is not something that we planned. You know, it's not, I'm going to raise all my kids in a box. It's not that. It's just kind of how, the circumstances lined up. My wife is, you can't really turn to a woman when she's 7 months pregnant saying, let's move. So over the past, my wife has gotten pregnant every year for like 8 years now.
Oh,
so there's something about, we definitely plan to move, and we live in Manhattan, so it is rather expensive, but it's finding the right place. We didn't want to move into a place that was just big enough to hold us for, a year. So we're definitely planning on moving.
Here's an email that's come in, follow-up to Charles's call earlier. This is from Jody, who writes of you, Jim, I love you. Please come to Madison sometime, and thank you for making family-friendly comedy.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. And, there's part of me that, like I mentioned before, it's a great benefit. And whenever someone talks about, particularly a dad who's like, this is something that I can do with my 15-year-old son. And, obviously as a dad, that's really important. But the weird thing is I even have an essay about how when you're a parent, the term family friendly has almost a negative connotation, because as a parent, you know that if a restaurant is family friendly, that the food's going to be mediocre.
Right.
Or if it's a family friendly hotel, that it might as well be connected to a water park. And there's there's kid friendly, which has no consideration for adults whatsoever. So there's kind of a double-edged sword to the whole family-friendly compliment.
So how would you, what category does McDonald's fit into?
McDonald's, is very much, we have an essay in there.
I know.
We all intellectually know that McDonald's is horrible. We know that they're essentially brainwashing another generation, and we know as parents that we shouldn't go there. But if you get in a car for longer than an hour with a young kid, you need McDonald's. You need to feed them. It's almost like a public service that they're providing.
Oh, no.
What's the alternative? You say if you're driving to a hotel, do you get the chicken nuggets at McDonald's, or do you get the chicken nuggets for $20 at a hotel?
Right.
So Jeannie and I, we had an opportunity to really kind of look at McDonald's, that we know the stuff's bad, but, we even joke around that, those Happy Meals could offer cigarettes in them, and parents would still go there.
I know.
They'd be like, all right, well, just don't smoke when you're pregnant. It's a necessary evil. McDonald's.
Yeah, we've been there. Many of us have been there. And don't want to admit it, right? Let's go to Mary in Marshfield. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi. I was interested in your comment, you know, about parents and the preschool and whatever. Well, we're raising our great granddaughters right now, and they're in kindergarten and first grade.
Mm.
And just wait. When you go to the teachers' conferences, you'll have to, when you're raising your great grandchildren, you're going to have to worry about touching up your roots.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you send treats. Well, yeah. When my kids were growing up and my grandson was growing up, and I sent cupcakes.
Yeah.
My great granddaughter came home and she told me that some of the other kids informed her they were supposed to bring healthy treats.
Yeah.
Cupcakes are healthy treats. There's nothing like a cupcake. You know, you put this, can you imagine not only your grandchildren, but put her thought in your mind, Jim, that you're helping to raise your great grandchildren.
That is unbelievable. I mean, not to sound too macabre, but, you know, I look at parenting, it's like, I'm probably, I'll be dead in a year. Like, that's how I feel sometimes. It's so exhausting. So, I mean, but there's also really something, you do want to have this involvement with your children. And I would love to see my grandchildren. It just seems so overwhelming. I'm so overwhelmed by the process. And as every parent knows, you get to the point where, you know, you're not in crisis management, but you're trying to make the best decision you can moment to moment.
Right.
So, but that's pretty impressive. And if, by the way, if the caller would love to babysit, we're always looking for a babysitter.
And somebody who makes cupcakes, that'd be fine with you, right? As long as you put some aside for Jim. Mary, thanks very much for the call. You have a chapter on babysitters as well. They're prized people, aren't they, to find the right babysitter?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I joke around about it, but there's definitely something about babysitters, how your first babysitter, it's so important that they have the right credentials. And then eventually you just get to the point where you're like, how long were you in jail? And you're like, all right, well, embezzlement, that's not that bad. And obviously I'm exaggerating, but there's different kind of babysitters. You know, there's people that literally their only job is to just sit next to a baby. But then there's, you know, we have five kids, so sometimes, you know, if someone doesn't have the energy, we don't want to subject them to it.
Right. It must take a lot of energy. I mean, I know you deal with them every day, but they are your children, too. It must take a lot of energy to babysit five young children.
Oh, yeah. No, there's different types of babysitters, but yeah, they're a really important thing. I mean, I'm a believer that, you know, we couldn't do it without the help of not only babysitters, but also extended family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my wife's family is really helpful, and you know, the kids love it. You know, so if there's somebody that's, helping out and helping us babysit, but also is an aunt or an uncle, it's, you know, that just makes it a special time for our kids. They don't, you know, they're not thinking about me and Jeannie doing a show. You know what I mean?
Right. Thanks, Mary, so much for your call. It was lovely. Jane in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Well, I have a 2.5-year-old grandson that I've been babysitting a little bit lately. And his mother has a pretty big baby bump right now. So yesterday he was telling me that he has a baby in his tummy, and when that baby comes out, he's going to be a big sister.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, you know, there's a little bit of material for you. And a few days ago, he wanted yogurt, and his mother said that he would have yogurt with his lunch, but he wanted it right now. And so after she was gone, he started coughing, those little coughs, like... and pretending he was having a cough. And so I said, well, what would make you stop coughing? And he said, yogurt. So anyway, those were just a few things that touched touched me at the time. Maybe it'll give you a little more material.
That's great.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Our lines have been very busy. We have time for maybe a couple more if you'd like to call in right now. We can squeeze you in. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. One thing that our family is really small, but you write about cousins, and I know your wife comes from a family of nine here in Milwaukee, and your family is very large as well. What is the, you write about cousins. I think there's a great deal of truth in this, that we really like to be with our cousins. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, to little kids, it's baffling. They're the celebrities of little kids. Like, if there was a People magazine for little kids, cousins would be on the cover. And it's not even, you know, my kids, you know, most of them have not even made the connection that their, you know, precious cousins are the children of, you know, my siblings or Jeannie's siblings.
Mm-hmm.
It's this strange kind of intangible that drives them. But we talk about how it's probably because there's an association with cousins are always at, you know, there's usually a party or swimming or cake whenever a cousin's around. It always seems to be a holiday. And but there is something amazing about cousins because it doesn't logically make sense. In a way, I think it's something beyond us to understand it, because they can see these. They're kind of like siblings that they don't have enough time to get sick of. It's fascinating.
I like that. And talk about celebrations. I love some of the charming pictures of you in your Halloween costumes.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I aspire to be an involved dad, and you know, the relationship of or the participation of a father in everyday life is changing with every generation. And my dad, I don't know what he was doing necessarily when I was trick or treating for Halloween, but he was most certainly not dressing up. And I've dressed up
right.
for Darth Vader. and I was also, Captain Hook. And, you know, it's weird being a comedian going on stage. You'd think that I would crave some attention, but you don't want to be dressed like Captain Hook when people are out, you know, on Halloween drinking. And it's amazing. You know, Halloween, when I was growing up, it was a holiday. And now, you know, it's like a month-long event where they're like participating in pageants. It's like, what are you going to wear to school?
Right.
What are you going to wear for the parade? What are you going to wear in the bikini contest?
It's too much, I think.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I know you have to go. We'll look forward to seeing you in Milwaukee on Saturday. And, Jim, thank you so much. The book, I think, should be a very big success. It's great. Jim Gaffigan.
So
yeah, you're welcome. He'll be at Boswell Books on Saturday. For his new book. This is at 7 o'clock on Saturday. It's Father's Day table, early Father's Day celebration. He is a very well-known comedian, and I like what the earlier caller said about his 12-year-old really loving Gaffigan. I think that young males particularly find him extremely funny, not just young males, but it's really nice that he's made a connection with young people. He's a stand-up comedian, an actor, and an author known for his riffs on Hot Pockets, on bacon, and he has some very funny things in the book about camping. He had to leave a little early, so we thought that we would play his sketch on camping, and we'll do so right now. Here's Jim Gaffigan.
I went camping recently for this next joke, and I married a woman who loves to camp, and I am what you would call indoorsy. I'm surprised we can still get people to camp. Hey, want to burn a couple of vacation days sleeping on the ground outside? No. What if I told you to get the crap standing up in the woods? I still wouldn't want to go. You'll wake up freezing covered in a rash. All right, I'll go. My wife always brings up, camping's a tradition in my family. Hey, it was a tradition in everyone's family till we came up with a house. My parents never took me camping. You know why? Because they loved me. It'll get you closer to nature. I want to keep the relationship professional. If it's so great outside, why are all the bugs trying to get in my house? Some places you have to pay to camp. You have to pay to sleep outside. That's got to be insulting to the homeless people. How much does this cost you? I live out here! That must be really expensive. Occasionally at the campsite, you'll see the Winnebago. That's kind of cheating, isn't it? Oh, that's what I forgot. My house. There's always that one couple at every campsite that's been camping for way too long. They have the folding chairs, the Christmas lights in July. We'd love to have you for dinner. I'm sure you would. Now, how do I get a padlock on my tent so we're not eaten by Ma and Pa Dahmer? Happy camper! Has anyone ever really been a happy camper? Because whenever we use that term, we're being sarcastic. He is not a happy camper. Why don't we just call him a camper? He's miserable. You know who's a happy camper? The guy leaving the campsite. He's the happiest camper. He gets to take a shower. He ruined camping for me. To be fair, it is beautiful during the day, you know, but at night you're always like, we're all gonna die! There's monsters out there! I see their eyes! I probably wouldn't be so scared if I wasn't sleeping in a bag. Hey, let's prepackage ourselves for the serial killer, huh? I can't get away, can you? I could hop for a little, but I'm dead meat. You ever have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night? You always look at your friends. Nice knowing you. Anyone want to come and get killed with me, or you want to get killed looking for me? We're all dead. It's not just serial killers. There's bears out there. Last time I went, I got this pamphlet that said if a bear approaches, you're supposed to play dead. Really? We're going to rely on my acting skills? Play dead? Who came up with that? Maybe the bears? Play dead, cover yourself in honey, climb on a large white plate. Don't try to run away from us. I mean the bears. How does that even work? There's a bear. Hope the bear thinks we die standing up. As if bears have some ethical code. I don't mess with dead bodies. I'm a bear, not an animal. That was the worst impression of a bear ever. Play dead. I'm not saying that strategy didn't work once, but when they find a body that's been mauled by a bear, how do they know that guy wasn't playing dead? Maybe he was the best at it. And the bear was like, great performance, but I'm starving. And he looks like a burrito. Why are we even camping where there's wild animals? That wouldn't be a selling point for anything else. Oh, it's a beautiful golf course. Plus, around the ninth hole, there's a pack of wolves. If they start running at you, just play through.
Jim Gaffigan on camping. That's it for this hour. It was fun, wasn't it? Thanks to Jim Gaffigan for being with us again. His book is Dad is Fat. And he will be at Boswell Books on Saturday at 7 o'clock talking about being a father. We thank Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program, and thanks, everybody, for all of your calls and all of your emails. We thought we would end with a story because it's a good one. I'm sorry Jim couldn't hear this one, but Janet emailed us with a story, and we'll send this off to Jim. He talked about sleeping and how you lose sleep when you're a child, particularly when you have a baby. You just, you don't get sleep anymore. If you'd like to sleep, it's a very hard thing. So she writes this one, which it's a funny story. When my father, who was a real sleep talker and hard to wake up, was roped into taking us to see Davy Crockett, which was a compilation of the TV shows we had already seen three or four times already. We went to the movies. You can imagine how old I am, she writes. He got comfortable in the cool theater, and he soon started to snore. If that wasn't enough, halfway through the show, he, dreaming he was in his easy chair at home, yelled, "Turn that GD TV down!" The volume was at a high level, of course. When we nudged him, he repeated it, and finally he woke up enough to realize where he was. I think that we left before the ending credits. Oh, that's a funny story. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and we are going to be talking about the NSA, this huge multi-billion dollar industry, and we'll be looking at electronic surveillance with the co-author, William Arkin, the co-author with Dana Priest. Do you remember that book we did, Top Secret America? It was really one of those books that you paid attention to because nobody had done the kind of reporting that they had on the extent of this industry. Is it a case of you spent all this money on it, you got to use it, so let's spy on everybody? Some are saying this is not a very big story. We'll be interested in hearing what you have to say about it. I can guarantee you it will be a very, very good show. And we'll also be talking, The Atlantic has a new series about cities, and it's on Milwaukee next week. One of our guests tomorrow will be Mayor Tom Barrett. So that's what's coming up. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. Hope you'll be with us again, and there are great conversations coming up now and for days and days to come on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.